Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Platting Podcast Series on the UBS Conversations Podcast Channel. For today's conversation, we are joined by Laura Chulgin, as well as Jacqueline Denton, both of whom have written articles on the planning implications under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Laura and Jacqueline are members of the Advanced Planning Group here at UBS. The team helps ultra-high net worth families and individuals with estate planning, tax planning, family office structuring, and other planning issues and strategies. Laura is a senior wealth strategist based in Los Angeles, and Jacqueline is also a senior wealth strategist based in Nashville. So with that, Laura, Jacqueline, thank you both for spending some time with our listeners and our clients on the Conversations Podcast channel. It's great to be with you both. I know we have a lot to cover today with our listeners. So here at the start, why don't you each tell us a bit about the alerts each of you co-wrote and what our financial advisors and clients can expect from each of them. Jacqueline, if you would like to begin.
Sure. Thanks, Dan, for having us. It's a pleasure to be here. So with our colleague, Andrea Stamps, I wrote several alerts tracking the proposed legislation as it passed first through the House of Representatives, and then another alert tracking the changes to the bill as it passed the Senate. And then finally, a third alert detailing the final legislation as it was signed into law.
Yes, and with our colleagues Jennifer Land, Carrie Larson, and Ari Messenger, we built on the good work of Andrea and Jacqueline and co-wrote an alert to translate the provisions in the new bill into actionable strategies that clients can consider implementing.
That's great to hear. Appreciate that context. Let's dive into this a bit further. I know the group has put a lot of content out on the bill over the past couple of months. So with that, Jacqueline, what are one or maybe two key takeaways in the bill that clients should be aware of?
So much of what this bill did on the tax front was to make permanent a number of provisions in the tax code that were set to expire or sunset at the end of the year. Those provisions came mostly from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was passed by the first Trump administration. So a number of those provisions that were set to expire became permanent, along with a few other changes, of course. So on the estate tax side, each individual has a lifetime gift and estate tax exemption that they can use to transfer assets either during their lifetime or at their death, without incurring any federal gift or estate taxes. This year, that amount is $13.99 million per person. Before the tax bill, that amount was set to go down significantly after this year to roughly one half of that amount starting next year. So what the tax bill did was actually increase that base amount and make it permanent. So starting next year, the gift and estate tax exemption will be $15 million per person, and then that amount will be adjusted for inflation starting in 2027. So similarly, on the personal income tax side, our current rates are based on a reduction from the same Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. The new tax bill makes the current rates and brackets permanent, maintaining a highest top marginal rate at 37%. Now, we also saw some changes to income taxes in the bill. A couple of those provisions that we've heard a lot about over time are the no tax on tips and overtime pay. Both of those deductions are in here in the bill. However, they do phase out for individuals making over $150,000 annually, and those deductions are also temporary. So those deductions are available now starting in the 2025 tax year and go through 2028. So both of those are a four-year temporary deduction. And then finally, one of the other changes that I wanted to highlight is a change to deductions for charitable contributions. Currently, an individual who makes a charitable donation gets a deduction for that charitable contribution so long as they itemize their deductions. The tax bill creates a new floor, and so starting next year, a taxpayer will only receive a deduction for charitable contributions that exceed one half of a percent of their adjusted gross income. So to put that in perspective, if an individual's adjusted gross income is, let's say, $400,000 per year, then they would only be able to deduct charitable contributions in excess of $2,000. So that first $2,000 is not deductible. This new floor goes into effect next year. So all things equal, a charitable donation will provide a bigger tax deduction this year rather than next year and going forward.
Jacqueline, thank you for highlighting some of those takeaways. It was an extensive bill, so it's good to know what it contains and have these takeaways. So with that, Laura, let's turn over to you. From your perspective, what are a couple of planning opportunities as a result of the bill that clients should be thinking of?
I would say two topics that many of us in the advanced planning group have been asked about after the passage are around the state and local tax cap or the SALT cap, and then the changes to qualified small business stock or QSBS gain exclusions. So tackling the SALT cap relief first, again, that's a temporary change, like many of those that Jacqueline just highlighted. This was a big negotiating point as we saw this new law navigate through Congress. In 2025, the cap for state and local tax deductions against your federal income tax, that cap has now raised to $40,000 from the previous $10,000. However, there is a reduction or limitation on the ability to take advantage of this new higher $40,000 cap if your adjusted gross income or AGI is in excess of $500,000. So essentially, that would bring the benefit down to the prior $10,000 SALT cap. We do see a 1% annual increase in the SALT cap under this new bill. And this is set to sunset back to $10,000 for everyone in 2030. So from a planning perspective, what many clients have focused on is, did this impact the ability to use pass-through entities or PTE or PTET legislation that many states enacted as a reaction to the prior $10,000 cap. And while some versions of this legislation did include language that would have curbed the use of PTETs at the state level, the final version did not. And as a reminder, pass-through entities essentially are those that we're referring to of S-corps, partnerships, LLCs, taxed as partnership, where tax at the entity level for state income tax purposes, essentially any benefits are outside of that SALT cap limitation, and the owners of those pass-through entities can then benefit from being outside of that limitation scheme. So this type of planning does remain available for those entity owners, even if on an individual basis they have modified AGIs of more than 500,000. If the PTET structure is not available to you, I think we will see some tax professionals discuss concepts around shifting income and deductions in certain years to potentially try to fall below that AGI cap limitation. And we may also see a broader discussion of the use of non-grantor trusts, or essentially trusts that are their own taxpayers, to try to fall outside of that cap and the limitation. But I would say of even more interest to our business owner clients and certain investors are the expanded QSBS benefits that came about under this new tax law. Prior federal tax provisions offered a very meaningful tax deferral and really exclusion benefits for certain business owners on the sale or exchange of their equity interests in qualified small business stock or QSBS. And this new 2025 tax law really expands that gain exclusion. However, it is only for stock acquired after the July 4th enactment date. So that's a very important provision that I think has been skipped over in some of the other pieces put out by people other than our group. So this for stock acquired after July 4th, it's really expanded by increasing a gross asset limitation for the businesses from $50 million to $75 million, increasing the cap on gain exclusion from the prior greater of 10 million or 10 times the taxpayer's basis to now greater of 15 million or 10 times the basis. And there is an inflation adjustment that's built in on that new 15 million cap that begins in 2027. And also, we now see a phased-in holding period for the gain exclusion benefits. Previously, it was only after a five-year holding period. Now we see 50% after 3 years, 75% after 4 years, and then still that 100% after 5 years for gain exclusion. So on the planning front, I think we're really going to see for business owner individuals who have entities that are not structured as domestic C corps, which is what's required to qualify for QSBS treatment, that many business owner founders and investors are now going to, again, weigh the benefits of a conversion to a C corp with these expanded QSBS provisions under the new tax law. And we'll still see many discussions around how to amplify that gain exclusion if it does apply.
Well, Laura, Jacqueline, thank you both for dropping by UBS Conversations, for sharing with our listeners and clients these planning implications under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, as well as highlighting some important considerations when it comes to planning strategies. And do, of course, encourage our clients listening in. If you do have any questions, please follow up with your financial advisor here at UBS. Or if you're seeking direct copies of any of the resources produced by Laura, Jacqueline, and the entire team around this topic, please be sure to reach out to your UBS financial advisor. Though, Laura, Jacqueline, thank you both again for dropping by today. Nice catching up with you both.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Financial Services, Inc. does not provide legal or tax advice, and this does not constitute such advice. UBS strongly recommends that persons obtain appropriate independent legal, tax, and other professional advice. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.